City Limits, Winds of Change is a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media and is funded in part through generous grant support from the Central New York Community Foundation, National Grid, the John Ben Snow Memorial Trust, and listeners like you. To support the project, visit the City Limits About page at citylimitsproject.org.
For too long, marginalized communities have been the victims of racial injustice. Stories left untold.
So I tell you, accountability is necessary.
Problems left unchanged and promises left unfulfilled.
We're marching to be seen, we are marching to be heard, and we continue to march for change.
This is City Limits, Winds of Change.
Welcome to City Limits, Winds of Change. I'm John Smith. Colleges and universities in Central New York have been responding to growing calls to ensure diversity, equity, and inclusion in education as racist incidents and ethnic attacks have been on the rise across the U.S. Their efforts coincide with an already difficult pandemic year filled with protests over racial and social justice. Local colleges are making concerted efforts so all students can feel comfortable on college campuses and to support them if and when they are attacked, verbally, through vandalism, or made to feel uncomfortable. A series of racial incidents happened on the Syracuse University campus in the fall of 2019 and in early 2020. Disturbing graffiti both on campus and nearby was discovered. A black female student even had racial epithets directed at her by a group of white male students. The frequent incidents perpetuated fears, pain, and discomfort. They also resulted in large student protests. Associate VP of Student Engagement Meredith Davis arrived at Syracuse University after the wounds and just before the pandemic closed in-person learning a year ago. She takes us to the new dining area at the Shine Student Center.
So different.
Yeah, it's wide open.
And even though we're in the middle of a pandemic, this is why I keep working at a university. It was kind of hard to get that when I first got here because I literally was here for a month before everything shut down because of the pandemic. So I didn't get a chance to really see students, engage with students, meet students. So that was missing. And so I feel more like I'm on a campus now because I'm in the student center. And because this is where students are, and this is where they're gathering, so.
What a transformation.
It is.
The closing of Shine and virtual learning gave her time to envision how support services would be located together when the center reopened last month. Davis says the Intercultural Collective brings student services in a convenient location.
I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, the university hired me is because I have a portfolio of collaboration. So it's important for students to come in this space, and then maybe Jorge Castillo will drop into the space. He's the director for LGBTQ Resource Center. Maybe he will show up in the space. Associate director for OMA. He'll come in, they'll have conversations with students. The next thing you know, there could be a program happening that's cross-collaborative. So I think it's really important for the space to reflect a multiplicity of identities and ways in which these identities can intersect.
Huey Hsiao is the Associate Director of Multicultural Affairs located within the new Intercultural Collective. He also served as lead for the Disability Cultural Center. He feels the new Shine will further bolster serving students who come from marginalized identities. The Shine layout was partly a result of student input and is a key element by the university to bring services in one place. Hsiao says student activism has shaped the university before.
We were established in 1976, and we were founded out of student activism. And so it's part of our history, and we're just excited just the evolution of, you know, student support at the university and to come to this point. With the new Shine opening and the renovation, it's just really exciting.
Hsiao also leads an academic excellence and leadership development program to support students of color to have a successful first year at college. SU Chancellor Kent Siverud says he is ready to implement the necessary changes to improve the campus climate. The Board of Trustees Special Committee affirmed it's also ready to advance the university's goals in the areas of diversity, inclusion, equity, and accessibility, but was not established to investigate the bias incidents. Former U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch released a report that found issues with the Department of Public Safety's interactions with students of color. She recommended strengthening the principles of community policing more broadly and allowing university members and officers to appeal results of DPS investigations. Siverud admits that mistakes were made and pledges the university will make those changes. They included changes to the student code of conduct, differentiating more severe penalties for bias-motivated conduct versus non-bias conduct. The university also revised the code to ensure bystanders and accomplices of bias-related incidents will be held accountable. We caught up with engineering student Kwejo Osepoku at the Shine Student Center. His family is originally from Ghana, and he senses improvement in the campus climate.
I definitely feel comfortable on campus wherever I go, north, south, wherever. Like, I feel like SU, like, especially with the organizations they have, we have things like NSBE and all that have been here for years, but after not getting SU, like, more organizations like that have come across, and so like it's just for students who don't feel comfortable. I feel like they have more opportunity to feel comfortable if they feel uncomfortable on campus like beforehand. So like there's more exposure. So like, I feel like SU is like has done a great job with that because I feel like they're trying their best. So it's like I can't find anything that like they can really build on top of what they've been trying to do.
The vice president of the student association is Ryan Golden. He feels the Shine Student Center facelift was much needed. He also thinks the intercultural collective should be on the busiest floor for the most exposure and to make a firm statement.
The intercultural collective should be on the top floor with, you know, the student association. If not for anything else, it should just be there for visibility. If we want to make it a priority, what's visible is what's going to show our priorities.
Golden is a white male and has been working collaboratively with SA President Justine Hastings, who is a black student. He says they felt it was important when they were elected by students last spring. The top leadership position would be held by someone representing what students wanted, a person of color. Now, they're hopeful that someday the SA president will be able to vote with SU's Board of Trustees, especially about matters ultimately affecting students.
They do want their outcomes. They want their, you know, opinion and perspective to win the day. But if it doesn't, they still can have a better level of trust if their point of view was present in the vote, if they know that they were there, that the decision wasn't made without them. And that's going to be crucial to building trust between students, you know, and the upper administration.
The student association at SU has experienced other gains in terms of shaping leadership at the Department of Public Safety.
We've secured spots for students of color on certain boards, you know, relating to the hiring of a new DPS chief. You know, and that wasn't something we had to negotiate. We were given the opportunity to name someone, and Justine and I named a student of color because we thought that that was the best route. And so we are trying to be, you know, mindful of the fact that we don't have a lot of power, but also realizing that the little power we have, we should be cognizant of what we do with it.
Golden credits student protesters for getting the administration to implement changes, but he really believes there is a lot more work to be accomplished.
The idea has been that for some major issues involving race, the answer isn't in policy or practice, it's in programming. Well, what if we bring this speaker? What if we, you know, hold this event? That's not going to solve racism. And not saying that policies will quote-unquote solve it, but it will at least create a safer space for those who are of marginalized communities. And so that's where Justine and I have been focusing our efforts, trying to get the university to recognize that their policies should change in some of these areas.
Recently, there were two incidents where Asian and Asian American communities were targeted in early March. They included flyers posted on campus bulletin boards with degrading statements about Asian students acting as agents of the Chinese government. There was also a racist comment directed at an individual while they stood outside their home, according to the Chancellor and Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer Keith Alford. it's not known if the recent incidents were connected to anyone affiliated with Syracuse University, but Siverud and Alford have firmly spoken out in a statement saying the actions and behaviors are disgraceful and harmful, and anyone who harbors those kinds of biases is not welcome in our community. So, Syracuse University responded to on-campus protests. The university also reacted to the national calls by Black Lives Matters and other groups for racial and social justice. The chancellor has committed to further work that is ongoing. And nearby at SUNY ESF, the Office of Inclusion, Diversity, and Equity is engaging with students and alumni to strive for an inclusive campus. Chief Diversity Officer Dr. Malika Carter says when people think about diversity, their own definition might not encompass the broad reach of people the word truly represents.
Many people use the word diversity, but for some people it's code for just something else, particularly race, often I find. But we have to let people know that the world of inclusion and diversity and equity is so broad. This includes things such as international experiences, studying abroad, which there's an office for at ESF. It's such a rich field, and also it's such a rich time to be able to contribute to the world. But it does not come without its challenges.
How has your office tangibly benefited students and the overall campus climate at the university? Have you witnessed any transformations?
It's not always about a moral high ground, but it's always about an economic bottom line. And so what we have done is we have funneled different, we help to grant write and to uplift different types of scholarships, not only for students, but also for faculty and staff, external partnerships as well that help to put ESF in the spotlight. We also make sure that we do a good job of helping people to understand what our institutional commitment is so that we can continually partner over and over again. It's not just a one and done thing. And so because of that, we find that people are continuously reaching out even after they've graduated or even after they've left the institution. So that has helped us considerably. One of the things that I would say to you that is something that I'm really, really proud of, and that is not only do people circulate back and benefit current students and current faculty and staff, but they circulate back with real money. They circulate back with real ideas that can translate to capital gains in the future or even immediately. That's one thing that I think that is missed when it comes to a conversation about diversity and equity and inclusion. If people feel included as if they belong, they're more willing to perform better, they engage more, and then they remember a good story goes with them, and then they recycle a good story back. So that has been one of our claims to fame in my short time since 2017 being at ESF. People really do invest back because they feel the need to. One of the things that we were recently able to do, I guess, a year and a half ago, is to canvass our alumni and ask them about their identities and identities that they experienced while they were students before they graduated. We then leveraged that information and shared pieces, parts, with current individuals so that they can now be knowledgeable about where alumni can go and also connect to alumni that were ESF students. So it's lots of different ways in which this work is applicable for not only real life, for bottom line, but also for human connection so that we can make sure that everybody knows they're welcome at the table of human interaction.
Carter says the campus is holding weekly sessions known as Diversity ESF 24/7/365. There are weekly discussions with students and faculty to create more infrastructure to become even more supportive and understanding of each other. ESF also recently opened a virtual place to create a greater sense of community during COVID-19. It's called GatherTown, with virtual rooms that allow people to meet up and have conversations via their personal computer cameras. Over at LeMoyne College, students and the administration have been working together, sharing ideas, and having important conversations about what needs to be done about diversity, equity, and inclusion in education. Manny Martinez is finding out the administration and students alike reacted to the national calls from groups last summer, but they were already working to improve issues raised long before the nationwide protests.
Lemoyne College is a small Jesuit school in Syracuse with just over 2,800 undergraduate students currently enrolled. 2,000 of those students are white. 206 are Hispanic or Latino. 183 are black. And even smaller numbers of students are Asian, Hawaiian, Native Pacific Islanders, or biracial. The school has prioritized diversity, equity, and inclusion. I visited Lemoyne College and received a warm welcome.
Hi, I'm Tabor Fisher. I work here at Lemoyne College, where I teach philosophy, and I serve as the assistant to the provost for diversity and inclusion.
Fisher and I met inside the Dolphin Den at Riley Hall.
We're in the Dolphin Den, where students can get together in small, socially distanced groups and hang out here. Back in the day, this would be very, very crowded and full of lots of energy right now.
But for students of color at Lemoyne, there's another safe space on campus where they can just go and hang out.
Well, where students of color go is IEG, and they would have, and if we weren't under COVID rules, hung out there regularly.
Fisher led us through hallways and up a set of stairs to get to the Office of Inclusive Excellence and Global Education. But first, she pointed out on the third floor an English department bulletin board showcasing prominent black writers.
All students at Lemoyne have to take a course called Major Authors. And this spring, every single one, except for, I think there's three sections of Shakespeare, and then all of these, which are writers of color.
According to Fisher, an emphasis was placed on these voices this year in direct response to last summer's events.
So there was this realization that there's this whole wealth of thought and beauty that we were ignoring.
Several years ago, Lemoyne College opened up the Office of Inclusive Excellence and Global Education. Kukwa Yamape is the associate director of that office. She explains how George Floyd's death in Minneapolis in May of last year had an impact 1,000 miles away here in central New York.
I think a lot of things have stepped up just after last summer. So things were in place. They probably didn't have as much publicity because students didn't trust the system.
Lemoyne student Fiona Schaefer cautions that even the central New York area can't claim innocence from racism and discrimination.
A lot of people who live in New York want to write the state off as one of the most progressive states and say, you know, like, we don't really need to worry about what's happening. You know, that's happening in other states. That's not happening here. And the really important work that was being done right after George Floyd was murdered was people were saying, no. It is happening in New York State, and it's not only happening in New York State, but it's happening in our specific communities as well.
Tabor Fisher has made it her mission to inspire change and bring about more equity and inclusion for BIPOC students at Lemoyne. BIPOC is BIPOC, for Black, Indigenous, People of Color. One way Lemoyne is working on being more inclusive is a new committee focused on change and racial justice.
Murder, we had some kind of hearing sessions on Zoom, four of them, for current students, alumni, faculty, staff to come and talk about their experience at Lemoyne and really rip that Band-Aid off, right? So we saw what was going on, and so the president promised at the end that we would form this committee.
Fiona Schaefer believes the committee has already brought about a greater sense of awareness among students and staff at the school.
I do think that this has created a real avenue, an opportunity that has encouraged a lot of white people to be willing and more open to talk about race and specifically talk about whiteness and privilege and in ways in which that I think we weren't having this conversation 12 months ago.
Fisher points out that Lemoyne was looking for motivated and driven students like Fiona Schaefer to serve on the committee along with prominent alumni and staff.
We looked at people that were involved in those listening sessions who had spoken up and were clearly leaders.
Yeah.
And we invited. So there was a combination of, you know, an open invitation, but also targeted to people that had clearly shown a passion for the work.
Interest was so high, students now have to apply before they can serve on the committee. And there's even a wait list. 30 students are eagerly waiting for their chance to be a voice for change. But those currently serving have bounced around ideas that are already being passed along to Lemoyne's top administrators.
I would say just generally from what the committee has proposed to senior leadership, a lot of things have been adopted and are in the process of being implemented.
Yamape adds that part of the process is also notifying students, faculty, and staff of the proposed changes. One of them is an updated mission statement.
So we sent 8 proposals out to senior leadership. Mm-hmm. 7 of those have been sort of in the cycle of being approved. Mm-hmm. I think 2 or 3 are done, and now it's our, Tabor and my job to disseminate to the community that this proposal, one of them is our mission and goal statement for diversity. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure the rest of the community knows we're committed in these ways.
The proposed changes have not been implemented immediately, but Yamape and Fisher are quick to point out why that's not a detriment.
It looks like nothing's happening yet, but that's because it's a process, you know. Yeah. So,
like I said, we're going deep. We're going down to the structural level, and it just takes time for those kinds of things.
Yamape is relatively new to Lemoyne, but that has not slowed her work down.
I have a good feeling about the whole thing, just because I was brand new. I mean, I got on this. I hadn't even been here a year when I was invited, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel really good, and I'm really committed, Tabor will tell you. I don't back down. I'm not one of your nice black people. I tell it like it is. I'm up front. I'm like, this isn't working. This is what the students are saying. This is what the staff is saying.
Kukwa Yamape prides herself in being honest and forthright. Those are qualities she says students see in her to find her more trustworthy.
I think there's a little bit more trust because they see, and this is not to boast, but they see my face, right? So my face next to Tabor's face makes a little bit of a difference. They're still like, oh, I don't know about Kukwa, but at least I'm there. So they can come to me and they can complain and gripe and I can do something about it. So I think that's definitely improved how they look at us.
Change is already in motion at Lemoyne, but Fisher believes there might be too much to fit underneath the one umbrella that is Yamape's Inclusive Excellence and Global Education Office.
I think it's too much for this office to handle all those disparate concerns. And so we are now exploring breaking it back apart. So
really?
The work of inclusion is just going to be this constant, like, you have to look at the data. Is it working? We thought this was a great idea, but did it have the results we intended it to have? And if it doesn't work, then you go back to the drawing board and you start over.
Fisher, Yamape, and the college all want to make sure the work they're doing for inclusivity will be long-lasting.
This is serious, real work. Mm-hmm. Our committee will continue. It will be here next year. It will be here the year after that. It will be here after that. And that is administration's decision. They believe in that we need to really dig deep, and it's going to take time. Yeah. But we're going to do it.
Student Fiona Schaefer envisions structural change leading to her goal of a united and non-discriminatory future for everybody.
My greatest hope is that we can build a society that is anti-racist. To build an anti-racist future, our approach needs to be inclusive and intersectional.
Encouraging diversity, equity, and inclusion is work that gives Tabor Fisher a great sense of pride.
I'm excited about this because, to me, I've been here a long time. I know that I've had an impact on a lot of students because I've taught a lot of students, and I love them. They are amazing people. But even with as important as I think that might be, I feel like, you know, I'm closer to retirement than Kukwa. I'm about maybe 4 or 5 years out. That when I leave Lemoyne, I'll feel like this is what I did. This is where I left my mark.
The continued momentum to make a positive impact in diversity and acceptance has empowered Lemoyne College students and administrators alike to work towards strengthening relationships on campus and in the broader community.
Lemoyne College has seen a slight improvement in the student diversity in enrollment numbers. The predominantly white student body had only 23% of students of color 5 years ago. That has now increased to 26%. Fisher confirms there were racial bias cases last year, and out of 11 reports this year, 9 were on the basis of race. The college adopted a restorative justice approach during the 2019 to 2020 school year, where harmed individuals and the people held responsible sit down and meet to talk over the situation.
LeMoyne College is engaging with the campus community to keep open dialogues about racial justice and is reacting by updating and establishing new policies to deal with bias. SUNY ESF is holding discussions with students through a new virtual meeting space and is offering other supports like alumni connections of shared experiences during and after college. Syracuse University renovated a building and brought several student services together in one central hub. The university is also establishing a community review board to review civilian complaints against Department of Public Safety officers. Local colleges seem well-intentioned to make the future brighter for students through acceptance and understanding and ensure their diverse voices remain at the table. Those shared experiences and activism for change could result in positive impacts that will hopefully last a lifetime. For City Limits, Winds of Change, I'm John Smith.
Thanks for listening to City Limits, a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Find more from this series at citylimitsproject.org and subscribe in Apple Podcasts for automatic delivery of new episodes.